Welcome to Season 2 and another edition of The Informed Gardener with your host, Dr. Linda Chalker Scott, Associate Professor and Extension Urban Horticulturist at Washington State University. And now, the science behind gardening with Dr. Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda Chalker Scott. If you're wondering, what exactly does an Extension Urban Horticulturist do? Well, this one takes information from articles about plant science and translates it for use in your garden. Well, the end of the year is coming, and along with all the holidays that you might be celebrating, you might be doing some shopping, or at least thinking about shopping, or putting your list together. So if that description fits you, you'll enjoy this week's theme, which is gifts that keep on giving. And because I might not have all the best ideas, we'll also visit several Seattle nursery and garden centers to ask gardeners what they think are the perfect gifts for the holiday season. But first, let's look at some gifts that keep on giving in the news. The first item comes from Science Daily, and if you're curious about this website, it's sciencedaily.com. And this particular article is called Soybean Adoption Came Early. So we're all familiar with soybeans. It's an all-purpose crop. We can use it to feed animals, and we can use it to feed ourselves. You probably used it in cooking oil, or maybe tempeh, or maybe edamame, or even protein powder. So it's a very versatile vegetable. Well, history has suggested that we domesticated this about 3,000 years ago in China. But there's been some recent research by archaeologists who think we may have domesticated this thousands of years earlier. This research is really interesting. What they did was investigate some ancient households. They looked at the hearths and the floors and the dumping pits, and they found remains of soybeans. And what they did is they looked at the size of the soybeans that were left and compared them to soybeans that we have now. So you might ask, well, who cares how big soybeans are now and how big they were then? Well, it turns out when you do domestication of any type of food crop, you tend to make the part you use larger than it normally would be. So in the case of soybeans, where you're using the seed, you take what were initially small seeds and you'd breed them until they had bigger and bigger seeds. It's kind of the same thing you do with pumpkins and those gourds. You know, when they do the biggest squash contest, they breed those so they're bigger and bigger and bigger every year. Same with soybeans. So they compared current soybean size to these old soybeans, and they discovered that 5,500 years ago, the soybeans were pretty much the same size. And this is, you know, 2,500 years earlier than they thought soybeans were first domesticated. So it seems to be that they were domesticated as soon as they were discovered, and this was in villages in northern China. And as soon as they found out that this was a plant that grows pretty well around people and also had some tasty parts, they started breeding those tasty parts to be bigger and better. So the only question for me that remains is, when did the first tofurkey appear? Our second item is also from Science Daily, and this one has an interesting title of Do Not Harm Invasive Species That Pollinate. And if you've read the blog, or you've listened to my podcast, or even seen my webpage, you've seen things or heard things that we've talked about before with invasive species and the problems they present. They're destructive, they wipe out native plants and animals, they disrupt environments, they just tend to be a nuisance. But oddly enough, some of these invasive species actually become essential to the very ecosystems that they're threatened. This is some really interesting research that was done in New Zealand. And what they found was two great environments to compare. One of these is the North Island, where almost all of the native birds and bats and other vertebrate pollinators have disappeared, primarily because of the introduction of ship rats, which are very destructive to habitats and pretty much eat everything and take over entire environments and wipe out other species. Nearby, there's also a smaller island called Little Barrier Island, and this is a nature preserve, and this one has no ship rats, so it does have all the native birds and bats and other species that act as pollinators. So they're looking at very specific flowers. These are flowers that are not pollinated by insects, but pollinated by birds and bats and other types of vertebrate animals. And they compare the two in terms of who pollinated them and which plants did best. So they used video cameras to find out, because some of these things, like bats, of course, are nocturnal, and so they have to have videos to catch who pollinates what. And what they discovered, this was really fascinating, they found that the plants on the island that had no native species left, none of the native bats and bees, had rats acting as pollinators. And the rats, these invasive, nasty rats, actually did a better job of pollinating plants than on the other island where the nature preserve was with all the native bats and birds and other vertebrates, which is really interesting. So because, you know, nature is pretty adaptive, and what's happened on the island where the native bats and birds have been wiped out, The rats discovered this as a food source, and as they're burrowing around getting nectar and things, they're also acting as pollinators. Works well for the plants. The plants really don't care one way or another who pollinates them as long as they get pollinated. So it's an interesting conundrum. If you have a system that's been degraded and all the native pollinators are gone, you really can't go and wipe out all the invasive species, in this case the rats, because then the plants don't get pollinated. And if the plants don't get pollinated, you don't have enough food for the other types of animals that are there, and your whole system starts to collapse. So it really is a little bit of a problem when you're doing restoration not to wipe out all these invasive species. And we can bring this back into our gardens and landscapes as well. We have a lot of native and non-native plants that kind of compete for the same space. A lot of the non-natives we have, things like dandelions and blackberries, they actually provide a lot of food and habitat for some of our native birds and other animal species. So going through and wiping out all these non-natives, you're going to be actually hurting a lot of native plants and animals that depend on these invasive species. So they might not seem like much of a gift to gardeners, but they can be a gift to the systems that have had to adopt them. Since we're talking about gifts this week, what better way to spend an interview than in asking nursery shoppers what they like to give and received as gardening gifts? So we visited with several winter gardeners as they checked out the selections at some Seattle area nursery and garden centers to see what they had on their holiday lists.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
So I'm here at Sky Nursery with Robert, asking him what he loves to give to gardeners as gifts.
I am giving my sister a water garden with some lilies and some tall rush-like things that will flower. And I made them from dividing the ones from the water garden I already have, and I'm going to put them in a very large galvanized feed trough. And I thought that's be a nice thing to get.
That's great. And my husband did the same thing for me, not with a galvanized trough, with a great big ceramic bowl that we put water plants into. It's a great gift. Good idea. And what would you like to get as your favorite gift as a gardener?
That's a hard question. I suppose that I would mostly prefer someone just gave me a gift certificate to a local nursery. That's probably more useful than anything else.
And I agree with you there, too.
And my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Paris is here with her cart full of holiday greens. And Paris, what is your favorite gift to give at the holiday time for gardeners?
Well, I often like to give gift certificates so people can choose what they like to give for themselves. But compost actually is another favorite one because I have several friends who love to get compost so they can enrich their gardens.
And so you like getting compost. Is there anything else that you like receiving as a gift during holiday season?
It's always fun just to get surprise plants, and you never know what you're going to get, and just to find a spot in the yard for them.
And that reminds me of something that I like to do, which is I take cuttings off of African violets. I take the leaves and I root them and I put them in tiny pots and give those away as gifts sometimes too. So kind of the same thing, giving plants. Well, Julie's over in the fertilizer section, and I'm wondering, what do you love to get as a gift during the holiday time for gardening?
Actually, on my on my Christmas list is our new gardening gloves. Of course, you need those every season. And a gardening apron, something to help me bring things around when I garden around my house.
Oh, so it's got all kinds of pockets in it for your various tools. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And what do you like to give to people as a gardening gift?
I love those clay faces and carvings that you can hang in your garden to give it a lot of little character, little fairies and trolls and things.
So Audrey and Robert are pushing their cart through the greenhouse here, and I'm asking Audrey, what's your favorite gift to give during the holiday season for gardeners?
I love to give Christmas ornaments because they just they can be a special reflection of a specific flower or even a tool. We've got something for his mom, his little little gardening tool, and it's just so whimsical. So we love to give those.
And what do you like to receive for Christmas or your particular holiday for gardening?
Well, if I had my druthers, we're not going to invest in it this year, but we're really thinking about getting a hydroponic system.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday. bringing happy holidays.
Well, Katie is one of the employees here at Sky, and so I thought I'd ask her also, what do you love to give to gardeners as gifts?
I usually like to give plants or a planter that I've made up myself.
Planter is a really nice idea, and you put a lot of your personality into that too, I imagine.
I do, but I also have to try and think of what they might like, and hopefully there's a compromise in there somewhere, because it's something that I have to look at as well.
That's great. And what do you hope to receive this year?
Oh, gosh, probably gift certificates to the place where I work, actually. That's always a pretty big treat. So.
Yeah, gift certificates tend to be one of those perennial favorites, aren't they?
They are. Usually what I end up getting is like the perennial that I'll never buy for myself because it's a little too expensive.
He'll have a big fat pack upon his back, and lots of goodies for you and for me, so leave a peppermint stick.
So, Jaden, I hear that you're a gardener. How old are you?
5.
And what do you like to grow?
Tulips.
What color of tulips?
Purple.
That's a great color. Do you hope to get something for gardening from Santa Claus?
Yes.
What would you like to get?
A rake and a shovel.
A rake and a shovel that's just your size, right? And what do you like to give people for Christmas that has to do with gardening?
Gardening stuff.
What kind of gardening stuff?
Like clipping and gardening, rake. Oh, shovel.
The shovels are always a good idea, aren't they?
Just exactly at 12 o'clock, you'll be coming down the chimney.
And Jill, what do you like to give as gardening gifts?
Well, we have actually given a lot of gardening gifts to Jaden because he loves to garden. And he actually, he got a rake and a shovel. He still would love more for Easter. And he was so excited. And he said, Mommy, I was going to ask Santa for these, but the Easter Bunny bought them instead.
That's great. Well, I'm really impressed that you've got your son gardening at this early age. It's wonderful to see that.
I wasn't really much of a gardener, but I've learned a lot by doing it through him because he loves to be out there and get his hands in the soil and to use the tools. And we've gone to a couple adult and child gardening classes together, and it's just been a really neat experience that he loves, and we're learning so much, and it's just a nice family time together.
Merry Christmas.
So you better watch out, and you better not cry, and you better not pout, and I'm a telling
Diane is admiring some gorgeous gardening ornaments right now. And Diane, what do you love to give to gardeners as gifts?
Well, I like the things like gloves. You're always wearing out gloves, and there's so many really fun ones, you know, that you can get. And things like the knee pad things and clogs and things like that.
Very practical, and they do wear out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And what do you like to get for gardening as a gift?
Well, likewise, any of the above. Now, I love to get some to decorate around our house. I love to get poinsettias and those kind of winter kind of or plants because I like to put them around our porches.
That sounds great.
With little tin horns and little toy drums, rooty-toot-toots and rum.
And I found another Linda here shopping during the holidays. And Linda, what do you love to give to gardeners for Christmas?
Well, you know what? I'm walking around here today, and I'm thinking about my budding gardener, my 6-year-old grandson. So I'm looking for things that will work in an apartment that he can maybe bring over to our house when he wants to work in the soil at our place. And I'm also thinking, I'm looking at the little colorful boots and kid-sized gardening gloves that they've got on hand, so he could come over to my garden and muck around in those. That might be fun. I also noticed some chaps over there. And I just the thing to keep my husband dry when he's out there.
So you're going to buy yourself a little early Christmas present here?
I might.
Well, there are a lot of wonderful things here as I walk through the greenhouse and the nursery. But what I really want for Christmas is someone to lay down all the rest of my pavers and my mulch for me. Anybody out there want to do it? Every week on the podcast, I look forward to answering some of your gardening questions based on the theme of the show. A few weeks ago, I mentioned the 3 P's for getting your garden ready for winter: prune, plant, and protect. We've covered pruning and protecting in previous podcasts, so today let's consider a planting myth. Well, a lot of gardeners really like to plant in the spring, and actually it ties in with a couple of festive times that we celebrate as gardeners. One of these is Arbor Day, And one of these is Earth Day. And in celebrating these events, a lot of times we'd like to go out and plant our yards or do some restoration or work with community groups and getting areas planted. So I thought I'd look at the history of this a little bit and see if it really matches up what works best for plants. Arbor Day was invented in 1872 in Nebraska, and the whole plan was to plant a million trees in an area that was pretty much just grassland. So this happened the last Friday in April, and they planted trees, and it spread very quickly to the rest of the country, especially areas that were in grassland, plain states, to get the areas forested for city people. And then about 100 years later, in 1970, Earth Day was invented, and that's on April 22nd. And so these times pretty much tie in with each other, and it's a great way to kind of rally the troops to do some gardening or some planting. Unfortunately, it's not exactly the best time to plant for certain parts of the country. And if you remember last week's myth, we talked about corn gluten meal and how it works in the Midwest, where the climate's slightly different than out here on the West Coast. And this myth also ties into regional climate differences. In Omaha, which is actually where Arbor Day first came about, the average total rainfall during the summer months, this would be June, July, and August, is over 10 inches. And that's great when you're looking for trees to establish their roots. But in Seattle, the average total rainfall for those very same 3 months is just a tiny bit more than 2 inches. And that's not enough rainfall to help establishment of any trees or shrubs, native or otherwise. So really, for areas that don't get all that summer rainfall, the best time to plant is actually right now, as long as your ground isn't frozen solid. So winter and fall planting is the best in order to give the plants a chance to get established. Roots never really go dormant. They continue to grow as long as the soil isn't frozen. And the nice thing is the crown is dormant. It's not going to be needed that energy. So all the plant's energy is going into growing those roots. The main thing is keeping the soil from freezing, and the best way to do that is to have a nice cozy layer of a really thick organic mulch on top of it to keep it warm enough so that the roots can grow. And there's been some great research to demonstrate that trees and shrubs that are planted in the winter or the fall actually suffer a lot less environmental stress than ones planted in the spring or summer. So on those days where it's warm enough to get outside, you're not going to freeze to death, that means your plant roots won't freeze to death, and it's a great time to go outside and start planting some of those trees and shrubs that will continue to give you lovely shade and fruit and flowers throughout the next year. This podcast is only one of the ways I provide science-based information for use in your own garden. For more, be sure to visit my webpage, theinformedgardener.com. It's my official Washington State University webpage, and it's full of great and free information. You'll also find archived podcasts from our first season there. Second, please join me and three of my colleagues at the Garden Professors blog. It's at gardenprofessors.com, and the four of us take turns posting on just about any gardening topic you can imagine. You can even add comments if you feel so inclined. And finally, for those of you who will never give up books until they're pried from your cold, dead hands, I've written three books that might be of interest: The Informed Gardener, The Informed Gardener Blooms Again, and Sustainable Landscapes and Gardens. You can find out more information on all three of these books at sustainablelandscapesandgardens.com. In any case, I hope you found this podcast entertaining and useful. I welcome listener comments and questions, and please email me at lindacs@wsu.edu. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast along with last week's turkey. Be sure to listen next time when our theme will be Winter Winners.